Send him rounds all night. If you want to hear his act, all you got to do is feed him drinks.
He gave the skinhead female a deadpan look.
Or fuck him a few times.
Though his delivery was perfect, the bartender's remark didn't have the anticipated shock effect. If anybody was shocked, it was he. The sound set his teeth on edge. But it was those huge, coal-black eyes of hers, absolutely insane eyes, that forced him to turn his gaze from her pretty, dirty little face.
Give us a bottle, then.
Better take you a jug, or you're just gonna have to come back for more. For a stumpy little scab, he can sure hold his shine.
Grub Hinton was in heaven. Never before in his pathetic, shit-crossed life had he been the undisputed center of attention. On either side of him at the table sat two of perdition's most accomplished and uninhibited sluts, both of whom had already accommodated him free of charge. The sluts hung on his every word, as did the prominent citizens of the ville who filled out the audience and kept his tin cup topped up with white lightning. Four more interested parties, three men in dusters and a skinhead woman in a long dress, started to amble toward him from the bar. Yes, it was mighty fine being the one in the spotlight for a change. A thing to be savored. And all he had to do to keep the ball rolling was talk, talk, talk.
No, I tell you, it was cleaner than a knife.
This was probably the 50th time Grub had said it, but nobody was counting.
Cut through old Roof's arms and legs faster than you can blink. And no blood came from the stumps. Not one drop. Sealed them right up.
One of the citizens shook his bald, sun-browned head in disbelief.
What kind of blaster can do something like that?
Pre-dark white coat, secret technology, I figure. Same goes for their body armor. I know what I saw. It's burned into my brain. Hundreds of pistol balls fired at those two muties from rock-chucking range, and not one ball so much as grazed them.
Sounds bastard impossible. You wouldn't be shitting everybody now, would you?
The tall stranger with the scoped long blaster and his friends stepped up to the table.
You don't know Grub Hinton, mister. He could never make up a story like this.
Yeah, I'm too fucking stupid.
Everybody at the table laughed at the joke. So did the skinhead girl, in a kind of hysterical cackle. Grub liked the look in her eyes, a lot. It was crazy, like her laugh. He figured she was the kind of girl who'd go triple wild if he could just get a leg over on her. And he could tell from all the silky bosom she was showing out the top of her dress that she had a much firmer body than either of the gaudy sluts he'd sampled. He licked his dry lips, then took a deep, satisfying pull of shine. In the radically altered universe of Grub Hinton, anything was possible. The tall, gray-haired man then bent over the bald-headed citizen and practically went nose-to-nose with him.
Why don't you folks give us a few minutes alone with this gent?
I need some water.
He rushed for the bar. The other citizens reluctantly rose and followed him, driven from their places by the threatening looks on the strangers' faces. Only the two sluts remained glued to their seats, clinging somewhat defiantly to the storyteller's arms.
Out, bitches!
The skinhead female then gave Grub a look so sexy and inviting that it made his groin twitch and jerk like a headshot jackrabbit.
We need us some privacy.
One of the sluts started to protest, but her co-worker caught her by the wrist and stopped her, indicating with a nod of her head the cocked, short-barreled blue steel pistol the skinhead held pointing downward along the outside of her thigh. Without another word, the two women made themselves scarce. As the four newcomers sat, the gray-haired guy produced a full bottle of booze and topped up Grub's cup.
Might as well get properly introduced. My name's Gore. The Right Reverend Gore. And she's called Giggly Jane.
The skinhead woman sitting next to Grub showed him her wet tongue. It was quick and pink, and pointed at the tip.
This here's Spade Crawler.
Gore indicated the barrel-chested, round-faced man on his right, who looked as if he'd been caught out in an acid rainstorm without a helmet. A big splatter of dead white hairless scar tissue sat on top of his head, the waxy skin dripping down on the right side to a shriveled mushroom of an ear.
And this is Egregious Jones.
The third man was big and powerfully built, with oily, debris-flecked brown hair hanging to his shoulders. Exposed at the open neck of his duster were interlaced angry red raised scars. The overlaid self-brandings were what in some parts of Deathlands passed for tattoos. Grubb noted that Egregious Jones's front teeth, upper and lower, had been filed to sharp points, but he was far more interested in Giggly Jane, whose amazingly hot little hand was under the table, resting lightly high on his inner thigh.
Have a drink.
Well, what do you folks want to hear about? The tornado? The blasters? The chilling?
All of it, from the beginning.
Gore refilled the cup, and Grubb retold the entire tale once more. His new audience was less intrigued by the flourishes of purely fictitious heroism than by descriptions of the Roachmen's gear, their body armor, blasters, cubone wheels, and flesh-dissolving foam. Gore asked him pointed questions about the operation of each of these devices, from time to time shooting meaningful looks at his friends. By the time the story was finished, so was the bottle. Gore sent Spadecrawler to the bar to fetch another.
I got a real sweet proposition for you, Grubb.
I'm listening.
If what you're telling us is true, and for your sake it damn well better be, sounds like there's some fine pickings waiting over at Moonboy.
You could look at it that way, I suppose.
What if I told you that the four of us are just the advanced scouting party for our band? What if I told you we've got a bunch more pals camped just outside the ville? All with good centerfire blasters, like this one. All of them seasoned bush fighters. Some of us used to be sec men over in the Eastern Baronies.
And what are you now?
Opportunity seekers. If you lead us to these armored muties, we'll chill them all, then divvy up the spoils, fair and square. Should be plenty to go around. Interested?
Before he could respond, Giggly Jane's hot fingers crawled into the middle of his lap, and once there, began to rummage around most skillfully.
I've got an idea. Why don't we go someplace where we can talk more freely about the details of the job? Someplace where you and Giggly Jane can get much better acquainted.
At this, the skinhead dug her nails into him, and leaning her face close to his, pushed the wet, squirming tip of her tongue deep into his ear. It was all the convincing he needed.
I love women.
With that, Grubb staggered to his feet. The mid-afternoon sun was still blisteringly hot when Ryan and the companions escorted Uta and the girls into the outskirts of Perdition. Built on a high treeless knoll, the ville had an unobstructed view of incoming trouble, from across the riverbed or across the plain from the range of peaks to the west. Uta knew right where she wanted to go. She selected one of the nearly identical, narrow dirt lanes that ran through the jumble of lean-tos at the base of the hill, and with her children in tow, started on up. Similar shanties, roofed with car hoods and doors, spilled down the flanks of the knoll, along with drifting piles of the inhabitants' refuse. The entourage drew curious looks from rag-clad, low-perdition dwellers, but no one said anything to them, and no one stared at them for long. At the top of the knoll, double-wide trailers sat in a circle. According to a huge, electric-powered sign that had been dark for more than a century, they were part of a pre-apocalypse commercial enterprise called Oki Bonanza Manufactured Home and RV Center. The trailers at the hill's summit and the lean-tos at the bottom were separated by a ring of junked and decaying motorhomes, all of which had been turned into multi-family apartments. Uta had no trouble finding the one she was looking for, a Winnebago Brave sitting on its rusted brake drums. She knocked on the door, and a woman who looked like her twin, only older, appeared at the cracked window. After a tearful reunion with her sister, Uta said goodbye to each of the companions.
We won't ever forget any of you.
Stay safe.
Christy and Mildred took turns hugging the two little girls. After Mildred released the older one from the embrace, the girl walked over to Ryan, her back straight, her head held high, eyes shining. She reached up and placed a tiny, perfect Deathlands daisy
onto his open palm. Staring up at him, she carefully closed his powerful fingers over it. Ryan basked in the intensity of her gaze, as hard